Committee Secretary, can we confirm that we have a quorum?
Good morning, Chairperson, everyone on the forum, on the platform. We correct Chair. Shall I proceed with doing the roll call, Chair?
Please.
Mr. Mbuyane?
Chairperson, good morning. Good morning.
Recording in progress.
Present in the meeting. Thank you.
Good morning.
Ms. Mwatse? Ms. Mwatse is on the platform, Chair.
Okay, proceed.
Good morning, Chairperson, and morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
I'm present.
Ms. Yaku, Chair, has joined us this morning.
Morning, everyone. I've missed you.
Good morning. We've missed you, too.
Chair, Mr. Burns, Namashe, Chair.
Molo sihlalo namalungu ngakumbi kwimpondo msakazi.
Molo Honorable Burns Mamashe.
Mr. Mulder Chair.
Good morning Chair, good morning all. I'm present and I'm looking forward to the day that we will be able to have physical meetings again, seeing you all. Thank you.
Yes, you are right. Thank you and good morning, Honourable Mulder.
Mr. McPherson, Chair.
I'm here. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Thring, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
Mr. Cuthbert, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
Good morning.
Chair, those are all the members currently on the platform. I'm assuming others will join us during the course of this morning, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Can we have the agenda? Thank you very much. You have all been welcome. We've greeted each other. The meeting is declared open. Can we have apologies, Committee Secretary?
Chair, at this stage, we don't have any formal apologies, Chairs. Other members will maybe join us, and if there's an apology, I will communicate that through the meeting.
Thank you. Can we have a move and a second for the adoption of the agenda? Honourable Mwatse.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I move for adoption of the agenda as presented.
Thank you very much. Can we have a seconder? Members? Thank you. Honourable Motaung.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to everyone. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. So our agenda has been duly adopted. Our first item of business is a briefing by the DTIC on its financial and non-financial performance for the fourth quarter of 2021-2022. Can I check who is leading the delegation, Committee Secretary?
Chair, it will be Mr. Shabir Khan. He will lead delegation for today.
Okay, Acting DG, over to you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. A warm welcome from Gauteng this morning. We do have a bit of sunlight today. Chair, within our delegation this morning, we do have a number of Deputy Director Generals on the call. We do have Mr. Stephen Hannibal, Ms. Sarah Chwane, Ms. Lerato Mataboge, Mr. Yunus Hussein, Ms. Reka G1, Ms. Elizabeth van Rienen, Ms. Irene Ramaphosa, Ms. Mpho Ramatle, and Dr. Evelyn Masocha from the Consumer and Corporate Branch. Chair, this morning we would purely be focusing on the fourth quarter report. This is quite specific to the fourth quarter. However, at a later stage, we will be presenting a comprehensive report for the entire financial year once the audit will be finalized and we'll then be able to present the annual report. Chair, in our delegation this morning, we also do have Ms. Solofelo from the ministry, as well as Saroj. And if I can kindly ask Sulu to maybe assist in flighting the presentation for this morning.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mushi.
Chair, may I kindly be given a flighting right?
Committee Secretary, can you give sharing rights to Ms. Mushi, please?
Sure. Ms. Mushi has been given sharing co-hosting rights.
Okay, thank you.
Let me just double check, Chair.
I don't see it with
Here
we go.
Thank you, Sulu. Chair, the outline of our presentation this morning covers the economic overview, the performance report summary, the highlights per program. We would provide a quick overview of the of the targets that were not achieved in this quarter. And lastly, the financial performance report, which I would request the acting CFO to quickly go through. Chair, would regard to the global economic outlook, the global economy expanded by 6.1% in 2021. Reflecting an expected recovery across regions in the second half of 2021. The global growth is projected to slow down from 6.1% in 2021 to 3.6% in 2022 and 2023. There is a downward revision as a consequence of the war in Ukraine. We've also seen war-induced commodity prices increasing. War-induced commodity prices increases and broadening price pressures have led to 2022 inflation and inflation targets being much higher as compared to the projection of January last year. However, the overall risk to the global outlook has increased due to the emergence of more transmissible and deadly COVID-19 variants, which threaten the resilience of recovery. The economic cost of war are expected to further spread afield through commodity price increases, trade, and so forth. And fuel and food price rises already having a global impact and expected to continue to have a negative economic impact on the most vulnerable. Moving on to the local fund within the South African economy. Here we've seen real GDP increasing by 1.2% in quarter four. It was really as a result of the increase or the rise in agricultural output, mostly in the animal products field. On the year-to-year basis, the GDP has increased by 4.9%, and the growth in quarter four is as a result of a rebound in consumer spending and some improvement in fixed investment. Trade performance, in terms of our trade performance, after soaring by 4.1% to 475 billion rand in quarter four of last year, the first quarter of 2022 saw South African exports dwindling by 3.7%, whilst imports have also grown by 4.1%. Despite a gradual moderation in the trade surplus, South Africa's trade balance with the rest of the world remains positive. The value of exports in 2022, the first quarter, was largely driven by exports of precious metal, products of iron, and steel, machinery, chemicals, prepared foodstuff, wood pulp and paper, etc. Moving on to the next slide, which provides a summary of the fourth quarter performance report. In this quarter, we had 57 KPIs and targets, and 48 were achieved, resulting in an 84% achievement rate. This slide provides a very high-level overview of the different targets in the across the different branches and the achievement thereof. Moving on to the next slide, which is which we're going straight into program one. In program one, we've achieved the majority of the targets with regards to payment of eligible creditors. We've also achieved our target with regard to employing persons with disabilities. Here we've achieved a target an output or performance of 3.9% against a target of 3.5%. We've also achieved target of women in senior management positions of which is also a 4% increase as compared to the target. We've also seen 54 interns coming through an internship program at the department for a period of 2 years, and 40 of these interns remained in the public service. Moving on to the next slide, which is our trade policy negotiation and cooperation branch. Here, starting off with the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, South African chairship of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area institutions extended to June 2022, following the election of South Africa as the chair of this bureau in February 2021. Since the 13th extraordinary summit, which was held in December 2022, we've seen significant progress with regards to the rules of origin. Currently, 87.7% of rules of origin have been agreed, and the remaining 12.3% will be finalized through an accelerated program by September 2022. South Africa, through the South African Customs Union, have also increased its tariff offer to the Africa Continental Free Trade Area to 7,045 tariff lines. With regards to the G20, there was a senior officials meeting led by the DDG of Trade, and this was held in March 2022. With regard to BRICS, we've led SASCA's participation and intervention at the first BRICS contact group on economic and trade issues, and this was held virtually in February 2022. With regard to our bilateral with Taiwan, there was a number of agreements with regard to strengthening investment in sectoral cooperation, including in textiles, footwear and leather, ICT, business process outsourcing, special economic zones, e-commerce, automotives and automotive parts. Both sides also have agreed to strengthen private sector partnerships by encouraging companies to participate the Taiwan Africa Business Forum. There was also a bilateral with France. The focus was largely on increasing or advancing South Africa's trade of valued added manufactured goods, as well as also increasing the value of commitment by French companies at the investment conference. And lastly, the implementation of the MOU on export and investment promotion. Moving on to program three, we've seen a number of big investments. The first one to report is the 385 construction jobs which have been created so far on the construction of the 1.1 billion rand edible oils plant, Wilma Processing South Africa Limited, at the Richards Bay IDZ. This project is expected to be completed by March 2023. And also the construction of the pipeline, which will be used to pump crude palm oil from the dock ship at the port of Richards Bay to the Wilma plant, has commenced. We also seen three investment pledges that were made at the Fourth South African Investment Conference with regard to the from the Saldanha Bay IDZ. Two of them have long journeys with Saldanha, namely Cape Oceans Terminals and Ankara. The third one is a new one by the name of Africa Quartz, which is a solar energy manufacturing plant for the South African and African markets. Moving on to the next slide. Here there were a number of youth and youth training and skills initiatives. Here we've seen two interns completing an internship program under the Textile Center of Excellence program, and also one postdoctoral student was supported to complete the program at the Nelson Mandela Bay University. Under the Fashion Design Innovation Center program in the Mutata, we've seen 18 seamstresses which were trained in sewing techniques through a partnership with Department of Arts and Culture, and six fashion designers were trained in the CAD software. We've also seen through the Workplace Challenge program a total of 101 enterprises comprising of 80 Black-owned, 52 women-owned, and 25 youth-owned enterprises supported through the Workplace Challenge program. The next slide. Moving on to program four, starting with the aerospace and defense sector, 149 highly skilled jobs were created and retained through the Aerospace Industry Support Initiative. Also, 20 SMMEs were directly supported for technology enhancement, as well as standards and accreditations. Within the chemical, cosmetic, plastic, and pharmaceutical sector, we launched the active pharmaceutical ingredients cluster. We've also seen investment commitments of 500 million rand made by Aspen at the investment conference that was held in March 2022. There's also been international funding to BioVac towards increasing local manufacture of vaccines. And the next slide is the primary minerals processing and construction sector. Here we've seen the completion of the Inyaza Light Metals Technical Services Center and Lab, and this would be the first novel titanium dioxide processing plant in Richards Bay IDZ. We've also participated in the future coal procurement program, which resulted in 8 suppliers being retained under the company's enterprise development program. We also developed an electronic booklet identifying supply chain opportunities in the mining value chain. Within the textile, clothing, leather, and footwear program, Galvina Africa was supported in the region of 12.5 million rand to address reemployment of 329 jobs, as well as the localization of niche industrial textile material. The next slide. Within the agro-processing and resource-based industries, under the Sugar Moss Master Plan, the department has recently also did a presentation on the Sugar Master Plan, and here we've seen some of the achievements with regard to some of the commitments under the Master Plan. Here we've seen deep sea sugar imports showing a 4% decrease from 2021-22. And an increase of 15% of imports from Eswatini and 45% from SADC. We've also seen the South African Sugar Association has allocated to the South African Farmers Association 60 million rand minimum sugar small scale growers premium payment, which was made in 2022 for 3 seasons. And this is in line with the commitment of the master plan of ensuring long-term success and the retention of small-scale farmers in the sugar industry. And we've also seen that at the end of January 2022, 200 million rand was spent on the industry's 5-year 1 billion rand transformation fund. Within the furniture master plan, we've seen PG Bison successfully commissioning its latest expansion project with the installation of the higher capacity dryer and fiber preparation facilities in its Mkondo manufacturing facility in Mpumalanga. And we've also seen two SMMEs supported in accreditation and certification to deepen South African capabilities. These SMMEs are namely AR Jones Engineering, as well as Sonha Projects in Quebeca, Eastern Cape. The next slide. Within metals, fabrication, capital, and rail transport equipment, we've seen Wheelec Technical Solutions Provider, which is a black industrialist, commissioned its first ever continuous transpose conductor production line in January 2022. And this is the key component used in bigger sizes of transformers for winding. And this new line will enhance local content and products and can also be exported to other markets. Wheelec is the only CTC manufacturer in Africa. In February 2022, Transport Engineering awarded Lucchini South Africa an interim contract to support about 12,000 units of forged wheels. And this award will close some supply gaps arising from technical challenges experienced by Cast Products SA in the production of cast wheels. Naledi Ring Rollers at Black Industrials commenced with the supply of rail wheel tires after resolving a long-standing working capital issues with the IDC and is ready to commence with the supply of both 34 and 36 inch wheels, which was a recent contract awarded by Transnet Engineering. This contract was largely possible due to the designation of wheels under the Rolling Stock Local Content Requirement Program. The next slide. This slide sets out some of the localization interventions. Largely, most of these interventions were prior to the Concord ruling, which came about in February 2022. In January, there was a tender by the Magaliesberg Water Board, which specified pipe requirements that would not favor local manufacturing capabilities. The tender called for products that could be imported from Spain, despite the availability of other locally manufactured alternatives that would be price competitive compared to the imported prices. Here, the board subsequently requested a deviation from local content from National Treasury, who referred the matter to the DTIC, and upon reviewing the matter, the DTIC declined the request. Also, in March 2022, the industry board brought a non-compliance issue on the prescription of ductile iron pipes to be used in the Umzinyathi District Municipality tender. This is despite the exclusion of using these pipes for state procurement as per the National Treasury Designation Circular. Accordingly, the DTIC intervened in this matter, and the municipality has indicated that the tender will be amended accordingly. The next slide. Moving on to program five, here is the work around the bills which the committee is familiar with. Starting off with the company's amendment bill, there were public and stakeholder submissions which were reviewed. This followed the publication of the bill in the Government Gazette for public comment in quarter three. The liquor amendment bill was also reviewed. And there was a number of interdepartmental engagements on the government measures and approaches to liquor abuse. Also, the Lotteries Regulatory Impact Assessment to review the provisions of the Lotteries Act was finalized in February 2022, and the recommendations will then inform the necessary legislative changes. Moving on to Program 6, which is the Industrial Financing or the Incentive Branch. During quarter four, there were 49 projects that were supported to the value of 821 million rand, with a projected investment amount of around 1.89 billion rand. The number of jobs to be created through this support is 3,392, as well as 5,945 jobs would be retained. Through the support, we supported a number of Black-owned enterprises and industrialists, as well as women-owned enterprises. And there was one youth enterprise that was supported, as well as a number of SMMEs that were supported. Also, 14 special purpose corporate vehicles for the film and television production were supported through some of the measures from this program. And the next slide. Here, with regard to the supported or the projected localization as a result of the support, starting off with the automotive sector, we've seen projected local procurement from component manufacturers and as part of the automotive supply chain to the value of 15.3 billion rand. Similarly, with regard to the film sector, we've seen supported productions in South Africa having a projected spending of 1.2 billion rand in the local economy. And similarly, we've seen supported productions will procure services to the value of 868 million rand from black suppliers. The next slide. This is a slide that shows the geographical spread of the support as per the quarter four, and this is largely the programs that we've supported through the Black Industrialist Program, as well as the other support measures that has come through from the industrial financing branch. And the next slide. This slide provides a quite a nice overview of the support across the different programs with regard to industrial infrastructure. There was an approval of 167 million rand to support various projects, 30 million rand towards the agro-processing. From the agro-processing program, 1,824,500 rand from business process services, creative industries 264 million rand, mineral beneficiation 54 million, automotive was 263 million, and renewables or the green economy was 27 million. The next slide. The next slide shows the disbursements that we made in this quarter. We made disbursement of around 1.5 billion rand. And this supported investments of around 5.5 billion rand in the economy. And these investments would have supported new direct jobs of 19,103, 63 construction jobs, as well as 5,091 jobs to be retained. The next slide provides an update on the support that the department has been making towards the companies that were impacted by the July unrest. Committee members would have been made aware at the time the minister has announced a 3.75 billion rand package that supported various companies throughout. As of today, as of quarter four, we've seen 217 economic rebuilding approvals across various programs, 171 coming from the National Empowerment Fund Economic Recovery Fund, 34 from the IDC Unrest Business Recovery, as well as the critical 12 from the Critical Infrastructure Recovery Program. The industries that were supported were in the education sector, health economy, construction, logistics services, other services, manufacturing, agro-processing, property management, retail. And through the support, a number of jobs were retained or saved across the various sectors. And here we've seen a large number of jobs that were saved within the agro-processing sector, as well as clothing, textiles, footwear and leather, property management, retail, as well as logistics services. Next slide. Program 7 is our export program, and here there were a number of business-to-business engagements and events during this quarter. The team also participated in a bi-national commission, and a number of companies were supported through the MBR program. The number was 43 companies, and there were also 3 trade and investment missions. A total of 253 individuals benefited from 15 export training and export awareness initiatives, and 1 impact assessment report on export promotion and development was initiated during this quarter. The next slide just provides an update on the Dubai Expo, which recently concluded in March 2022. And here a number of companies were supported through the physical pavilion that was in UAE, as well as also assisting companies through various virtual platforms. Trafica showcase served as a showcase to present to the world the best of South Africa had to offer in terms of trade, investment, tourism, as well as sports, arts, and culture. And through this initiative, the country was able to profile a range of sectors, including agriculture, agribusiness, clothing and textile, automotive, mining, capital equipment, tourism, hospitality, and manufacturing. Opportunities in renewable and clean energy, fintech, healthcare, digital technologies, defense, and aerospace were also presented. Initial indications out of this expo indicated that close to 90 business leads were generated with an estimated 290 million in potential returns. And this is something that the team is working to ensure that these are then realized. Moving on to Program 8, which is our investment branch, Invest SA. The branch or the colleagues achieved an investment pipeline of 124 billion rand this quarter. We also co-hosted the 4th South African Investment Conference, which was held in March 2022. There were 11 ease of doing business engagements with various technical working groups, as well as stakeholder engagements, 114 investor consultation engagements for rapid implementation. We also assisted with 57 visa recommendations for technical experts of various companies and 49 intra-company transfers for critical skills and permanent residency visas were facilitated as well. Moving on to Program 9. And during this quarter, the department and the minister was notified of 63 mergers, and the minister was advised to participate in 7 of these public interest considerations. With regards to DP World, the Dubai Ports World Logistics merger with Imperial, here we participated in the merger on public interest grounds, and following the engagements and the negotiations between the Competition Commission, the merger parties and the minister, as well as the tribunal, approved the merger subject to the following conditions. The first one was around enterprise and supplier development and corporate social responsibility initiatives. And here, Imperial will increase its enterprise and supplier development expenditure in South Africa. It will also increase its spend on corporate social responsibility initiatives by not less than 10% per annum and above the current 16.5 million rand per annum. In addition, Imperial will spend an additional 15 million rand over 3 years on training and development of black persons. It will also increase its annual procurement expenditure for black woman-owned businesses, as well as qualifying small enterprises and exempted micro enterprises. The next condition was the employee share ownership program. And here, within 24 months of the merger, the merged entity must establish an employee share ownership program through which Imperial employees will benefit from an effective 5% interest in Imperial Logistics South Africa through an employee trust. Amongst others, Imperial employees will not be required to pay to participate in this program. The next condition was around employment, and here no employees may be retrenched as a result of the merger for a period of 3 years from the merger's implementation date. And the last one was around capital expenditure, and Imperial shall incur no less than 2.1 billion rand of capital expenditure in its African operations for a period of 4 years ending 30th June 2025. Moving on to the next slide, which is Program 10, which is our research branch. And here we hosted an inclusive growth knowledge network webinar entitled Just Transition for Local Economic Development on the 29th of March 2022. This webinar was attended by a number of national sector departments, provincial economic departments, and the entities, as well as business and labor representatives. The aim of this webinar was to exchange knowledge and ideas to enhance the just transition social dialogue, as well as to unpack the theoretical and policy norms associated with the concept while addressing practical socio-economic constraints and limitations associated with the required transformation. Moving on to the next slide, which sets out some of the targets that were not achieved. Starting with the first one, which was the fit for purpose structure. Here, this is something following the merger of the two former departments. This is something that we still working quite closely on to ensure that we really do have a structure that is fit for purpose. An RFQ was initiated to assist the colleagues with this process. However, there were some delays due to the halt on the procurement by National Treasury. Also, some of the training interventions were halted as a result of some of the procurement delays. However, it's anticipated that these processes will be concluded in the first quarter of 2022-23 financial year. With regard to the governance framework, this review is still underway, and this review will be carried over into the new financial year. And with the assistance of the Economic Research Grant, we have had a discussion to ensure that the acting CEO unit is capacitated to ensure that this framework review is completed timelessly. Moving on to the next slide. Under Program 3, the annual report on community and HDI ownership. The report in the form of a spreadsheet on ownership scheme and participation by workers was produced. However, the quarterly target was not aligned to the annual target. The HP was corrected, but due to it not being able to be tabled on time, this alignment could not be corrected. However, regulations were developed and our annual target was met. The next one was the target of one master plan as per the reimagined industrial strategy. There was a draft plastics master plan that was presented and approved by the executive board of the department. And this plan will now be submitted to the minister for his consideration. With regard to the target of 7 billion rand in terms of the value of investments that were leveraged, we achieved 6.5 billion ran against this target of 7 billion, and the reason for deviation that fewer applications with lower investment values were received in the quarter due to the economic downturn and COVID-19. The next slide. The next slide under Program 7. Both those targets were achieved as part of the total annual targets. However, they were achieved in prior quarters, hence there's no need for any further corrective action at this stage due to the annual targets being achieved. Under Program 10, the number of district economic briefs, this one was also achieved in quarter 2. And then the last one was around the
number of research studies to identify future growth areas. This report was not completed. Here the focus was around the active pharmaceutical ingredient study, which is a highly specialized scientific field. And here this research work would be outsourced, then start the procurement process to then secure service providers to conduct the study. Chair, if we move on to the next slide, which is the financial performance, I will at this stage invite Ms. Irene Ramaphosa to quickly take us through the next few slides, and we can then conclude at that point and take any questions from the members. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning. On the financial performance for the department as at the 31st of March 2022, Chair, we had an adjusted budget of 11.8 billion. And then out of that, we had spent 11.6 billion for the financial year. That is a 98.32% spent for the department that we had. When you look at the graphs that we have on your right, the first one just explains and splits how the spending was basically done. The bulk of it went towards the incentives of the department, which is where our biggest budget is. And then the second one we had, it was the infrastructure, public entities as well, which are the transfers that we do. There were other certain external programs that we did as a department and the operating expenditure for the department. Going further down, Chairperson, to your left now, it just explains what the specific amounts are. We had 6.3. I'm just breaking down that 11.6. 6.3 was that the infrastructure and the incentives. Chairperson, the 2.1 billion was the transfers that went to the entities, and then we had 1.6 billion that was dispersed to various programs. At the IDC and the CSIR, such as the Social Employment Fund. Chair, the other big spend was also on the operating expenditure, which was 1.5, which was about 13%. And then the smallest chunk of our spending went towards some of our membership and NPO, which accounted for only 1.6%. And then if you go to the right, that other graph, Chairperson, it basically just explains, breaks it down in terms of the type, what I've just explained here, the figures. 4 million went to the incentives specifically, and then the infrastructure was the 1.6, Chairperson, just breaking it down again, showing you how where the bulk of our spending basically goes towards. Can you please move to the next slide? On the next slide, Chairperson, we're showing you how the spending of the department has been from quarter to quarter. And the quarter that we're focusing on right now, which is quarter four, we had projected that we'll spend about 2.9. We had spent 3 billion for the quarter, Chairperson, but you'll understand that the quarter we're looking at is now at the financial year end. Then cumulative, we have spent that 11.6 from the projected 11.8. The expenditure for the fourth quarter has actually grown by about 87%, which then took us to this 3 billion that I was talking about. And then the graph that you're looking at on your right, Chairperson, is just showing you our projections versus our spending for the department. We spent about 98.3%, which I had explained on the previous slide, Chairperson. If you can please move on to the next slide. Chair, on this slide here, we then explain the different variances in terms of what was the adjusted budget versus the expenditure from a program perspective and from an economic classification perspective. In terms of the programs, Chairperson, I will just zoom in slightly on the ones that we had major underspending on. Chair, there are various reasons that the DG had already explained in terms of understanding, firstly. Just to add to that as well, under administration, Chairperson, we found that there was, because we're using virtual platforms as a department and virtual engagement, we had a huge saving coming from that. So we understand from that perspective, and that actually affected all the 10 programs of the department. And also, there were certain ICT initiatives that we wanted to conclude as the department, which we were not able to finalize as a result of the Concord ruling also, which affected us, which the DG also explained a bit in his reasons. Chair, and then under Program 3, Chairperson, one of the key things was also, again, the virtual platforms that we had. And then also there were certain business advisory services that the branch wanted to do, which they were delayed. For various reasons, some of them had to do with COVID, and some of them really had to do with what came out of the Concord. Yes, it did come out by mid-Feb, but there were certain things that people had planned to do, which impacted people's spending. Chair, and then the other one that I want to zoom into is on program 6. Chair, the DG had highlighted one of the reasons was due to fewer applications that we received. Also, another thing I wanted to include here is the fact that if you're looking at it, because now we're looking at the full figure for the financial year, is the fact that when we disperse, there are certain conditions that need to be met before we make any disbursement. And we had certain recipients of the funds who had not met key performance requirements, which are a condition for us to disperse. So there are certain disbursements which you also did not do as we're not able to fulfill as a department as a result of the recipients not basically meeting the key performance requirements. Chairperson, and then the other one I want to zoom into a bit is on Program 10, which had a slightly bigger variance, the 27. This was mainly because of certain studies which had been commissioned, which were not finalized as at year end. Chairperson, we can zoom into that if Chair wants, but those studies will be finalized now within Q2 of this current financial year. Chair, on the economic classification, you will see that the biggest underspending is coming from our goods and services, and really is informed by the fact that we're using a virtual platform for our engagement, number one, and also the Concord ruling that came out right at the end, which we had been explaining. And then the other one, that last one, the capital assets, which has said that we're not able to finalize some of the initiatives that we wanted to carry out by the financial year end as a result of us having to halt some of our procurement processes. Chair, with that said, I thank you. I will then hand over back to the DG. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Irene. We then conclude our presentation at this point, and we will then hand over back to yourself for any questions or comments. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So, members, as we hand over to you, we know that the purpose of this briefing is to assess the performance of the entity against its resource allocation. So I see Honourable Cuthbert's hand. Can I see hands, please? Honourable Cuthbert, Honourable Thring, Malamach, Tswaku, Motawum,
Burns Namashi, and Ms. Mbuyani.
And Mbuyani. In that order, Honourable Cuthbert, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, I think the first thing is just thank you to the department for a brief presentation. I think sometimes we have officials who come and present to us and they waffle instead of just sticking to the content. And I think all the usual content was covered in a much shorter period of time. So good job to the acting DG. Just a couple of questions, Chair. The first one being the reference to an investigation into the review of the lotteries legislation, if the acting DDG could, or acting DG rather, could please provide a little bit more information on that, and when there's a proposition by the department to bring that to the committee for consideration. Is it going to be an entirely new bill? Is it going to be an amendment? I think that, that we would really be, you know, interested in finding out what the movement is on that. And then the second thing, Chair, is just regarding to a written question that I submitted to the Minister. And I just wanted to understand something, because this detail was not provided in the responses. And it relates to employees of the department that are currently under suspension or subject to disciplinary. Now, there's a chief director apparently that is been fired for alleged fraud, or suspended rather for alleged fraud. And I just want to understand what is the nature of that fraud. I understand that the Department of Agriculture is involved, and it's unclear because there's not enough detail that's provided. So I would just like to understand, you know, what the situation is there. I think that's exceptionally important. And then there's also another staff member of the DTRC, a deputy director, that apparently failed to disclose a financial interest. I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean that the person, you know, gave an, or rather awarded a contract to somebody who they had a familial relation with, or what? Could we please just get a little bit of clarity on that front? And then lastly, Chairperson, and I'm not sure if it's above the pay grade of the officials here, but I just want to understand, in another written response, I was told by the Minister that there was a delay in the recruitment of a new DG because of the July unrest and because they needed to finish the annual performance plan. Can we just have an understanding of when this process is expected to be concluded? Because we haven't received a fixed date. We don't know if the advertisements have gone out, and, you know, when we're actually going to have a permanent DG in place. And I think it's important that both the committee and the public are aware of that, because we've seen what has happened in many other departments where they have acting DGs and other acting officials for long periods of time, and I don't think that it, you know, promotes the kind of continuity and sustainability, you know, that we as the opposition are looking for particularly. And, you know, I think that suits the department best. So if I could just please have a response to those. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Cuthbert. Honourable Weintering.
thank you, Chair. Chair, my first question is with regards to our BRICS, the relationship that we have at BRICS, partnership that we have together with our relations, trade relations with Taiwan. Taiwan and China currently are not seen eye to eye, and there are military exercises by China in and around the Taiwanese area. And so what role is South Africa playing, if any, with regards to these difficult relationships that we sometimes, political relationships that we sometimes see playing out? And are there any plans in place should there be, and hopefully there won't be, but should there be an invasion of Taiwan? Are there any plans in place with regards to the relationships that we actually have with Taiwan and China, and what are those, and what are those plans? The second question is with regards to the industrialists that we have supported. Just a simple question there is, how many of these industrialists have actually survived the lockdown? So of the total number that we've supported, is there a figure of how many have actually been able to continue as a going concern, and maybe how many have actually closed down as a result of the lockdown? The next would be with regards to the small business. There's been small business department. There's been corridor talks of this particular department being assimilated into DTIC. Does the department support these ideas? And is there any truth to the rumor that the small business department is going to be, or small business department is going to be assimilated into DTIC? the next share perhaps I just need to say that every job created certainly is, and every job saved in the view of the ACDP is welcomed. And we see that, you know, there's been that some 3,000 or so jobs created, over 5,000 jobs saved. But clearly this pales in comparison to the high unemployment that we currently have, over 35% on the expanded definition and over 40%, or over 35% on the narrow and over 45% on the expanded definition of unemployment. So we have millions of people in South Africa, close on to possibly 10 million people unemployed. What is there to turn this around, to ensure that we actually are seeing not just a few thousand jobs created, but what we need is these millions of jobs created? I know it's a tall ask, is there a plan to see these hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people being employed? The ACDP also welcomes the fact that we have a trade, a positive trade balance or our balance on payments, and that is welcome. But would this not be further increased? Do you not agree to the acting DG? Would you not agree that this would be further increased if we continue to drive the policy of beneficiation? And rather than exporting, and I know that there's some positive strides being made with regards to beneficiation, but if we were to look at areas where we are not beneficiating and we are still exporting the bulk of our raw materials and then importing sometimes the finished product, should we not actually be targeting these areas and in that way continue to drive our positive trade balance in the right direction, as well as improve the negative unemployment rate that we have? Then what measures or interventions are there, if any, and I may have touched on this, to make many of our people that are unemployable, and that's one of the challenges that we have, is that a large percentage of those millions of people that are unemployed are unemployable because they lack skills. So is there any kind of pipeline process to assist these who are unemployable through a process of upskilling? And then finally, the 7 billion rand target that was not met, investment target that was not met, is it due to COVID or was it possibly an unrealistic target? Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Honourable Singh. The next person is Honourable Alamacha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. As much as I welcome the presentation, I have just two questions that I think will assist me to deepen my understanding. There's this issue of the interns. Now, question will be, what happens to the interns employed by the department post their internship period? Does the department have sufficient capacity to absorb them permanently? If so, how many can it absorb permanently? Chairperson, I'm asking this because the issue of interns do assist. Now, them now had to be laid off is where it becomes a problem. That is what influenced my question. Now, the other one question will be, under Program 9, Competition and Economic Planning, the DTIC attributes underspending mainly to delays in disbursement to the DTIC. You'll remember the Divisano construction, as there were challenges in the financing model, and this was the key contributor to the underspending. Can the DTIC explain those challenges and what has been done to address these challenges? Chairperson, I understand I've got the challenge of the network. Those will be my question for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Malamacha. Honourable Twaku.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I would like to have to switch on my video because I've got a serious problem with the network. Apologies for that. So, Chairperson, I have a couple of questions there. In program 3, it says special industrial development and economic transformation there, and then there was an underspend there. What is that? Can they unpack it? The areas where they actually underspend on. And then the next one was the program 10, economic research and coordination. Also, there's an underspend there, if I'm not mistaken. Now, can they unpack which studies that they are doing, and the progress thereof? Because so that those are, for me, the areas, if you're serious about job creation, these are the areas where you should be actually focusing on and be spending on, not the ones of administration, of salaries and incentives. That one I really don't care about. And then also, can I get a clarity? What is this, the spend of the budget, 40% on DIC business incentive? What is actually that? That's almost 40% of the budget is actually going there. Can I just get the clarity on that? When in the department is always talking about master plan. What is this master plan, Kasegas? Is it a plan of other plans? Plan of another plan? And were those plans complete? So that now, or they did not work, so that now you're coming with a master plan. What is a master plan? Because it's like there's a festival of master plans everywhere. And then these master plans, when are they going to be completed? Do they have a time and date? You know, because I don't want to spend my term not actually even implementing one thing that is actually revolutionary. Because the master plan of a master plan of master plans. When we're gonna get down to do the job actually? Are these master plan having times and dates? And then there's all this presentation on the chair. You know, my worry is that we get numbers. Okay, myself, I'm member Chwaku sitting in some place here. I'm getting numbers from the department. But I think that within this committee, we've been asking in terms of the proof. List of this company, I agree with Member Singh. Which are these companies, that are there operating, or maybe now they've closed down, and all of those kind of stuff. And when they saying that they supported this and supported all this, where is the proof? Because I just see numbers, and I can't do a verification. And I requested from you, Chair, maybe from this committee, to say, can the department supply a list of these companies that the IDC and all other entities are funding, and these companies are operational? Because most of these companies that IDC, they've been claiming that they are funding and creating jobs and is working fine. Some of them, we watch them on TV, they're actually closing down. Like the minister there stood up in parliament and says that, with the first bio, what is this, a vaccine, the vaccine manufacturing, company there in PE. That we just got from the news that thing is actually closing down because there's no one ordering anything. And then there's another one now, the migration as well. The digital migration factor, I think it's in the Eastern Cape somewhere. Well, there were some rumors that also that it's actually going to be closing down. There was a condom factory that was, put in, and then IDC came in there and the government is closing down. Now, that's why I'm saying that with this, I always take these reports with a pinch of salt because I need verification. I can't just work on something that is pie in the sky. I need to say, because that one is working, that one is not working, this one is working, that is not working. And I agree also with my other colleagues to saying that sharp jobs, they claim that jobs are being created. But again, I ask a simple question. Does the department know what is an unemployment rate in South Africa? And to say you got an unemployment rate of, let's say, 4 or 5, something like million, is the department making a dent on that? Are there these master plans that they are giving us addressing that? And if not, when is it going to do it? Do we just throw hands in the air and say, okay, fine, it's not going to happen? For example, in the other committees, like, for example, Home Affairs, they have a problem of, let's say, queues. Now, department go and say, what are you going to do with that? How many, what are the hotspots? They go and give us, okay, we've got almost, let's say, 100 or something hotspots. This is what we're going to do. We're going to start like this and like that and like that. Now, the department, I ask them, is it your mandate to actually create jobs and come up with all these things here? The department target to say, we want to dent those jobs there. And this is the plan that we're actually going to be doing. 5,000, okay, you created, but it's not making a dent. And there's a huge bloodbath. Now, there's a lot of billions which have been thrown around on incentives and all other things that I don't understand. But how many industries which are being opened up and creating jobs? That is what we want to know. Maybe, Chair, I will propose that these meetings are short because people, they present and then they go. Is it possible sometime we have a workshop or some kind of a meeting where we can interrogate these things properly? Maybe if it's an all-day meeting. That is what in the Department of Economic Development and Rural in Gauteng legislature we used to do at some point. I'm just saying that, Uri, so that when members, we want more information, we can, the presenters must present, we ask questions, they answer, we ask follow-up questions up until we are fine. Because there are some things that we want to ask, but for the sake of time, we say, okay, fine, maybe in the next time, but maybe there will be no next time because there's a different report. We want to interrogate all these reports properly. What economic research are you doing? What are you doing to create jobs? Which are these companies that you say that you are funding? Are they operational now? Where are they? And then we want maybe some of them to come and visit those companies and the boards to come and tell us, yeah, okay, yes, we've got 1, 2, 3, and 4, so that we don't have a hearsay, Chairperson. So I would propose maybe, Chair, at some point, let us have this strategy session or a workshop with a committee and the department of this, the DTIC, so that I'm able to ask and satisfy myself, okay, maybe it's fine. And also we invite different schools of thought of economists, it's fine. But myself, I'm actually left economics, actually more social economics. If there are other economies there that they have, we invite all of them. They tell us, how are we going to grow this economy? Are we in the right track? Last one, Chairperson, the minister. The minister, in many committees that I've attended, maybe the minister will be absent once or twice. And they will stay there for a long time up until this committee is finished. We request that the minister must be here to answer questions as well, please. I know that you've got Minister Erema Motsoaledi in the Home Affairs, even though we did not disagree, we did not agree each other, but he was there listening, even though he's very busy. Even in the public works, Minister Didilil, will always be there. So we request that the minister must not come to this meeting and stay for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and tell us all these wish lists, and then he disappears. He must respond. We want him to be here. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tswaku. You have been heard, especially regarding the workshop. Honorable Motaung.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Only two questions. One, Chair, under Program 2, we note that there are a number of bilateral engagements the department has held with various countries. My question is, what direct benefit is expected to emanate from this engagement, and how will they assist South Africans in creating jobs and reducing poverty? The last one, Chair, the DGIC attributes underspending in the MOST program to lower than expected compensation of employment of employees due to the low cost of living salary adjustment. Can the DGIC expand on this? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Motaung. Honourable Burns Mwamashe.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think, Honourable Chair, let's welcome the report and at least agree with the Honourable Cuthbert that the report was quite short and concise. I'm sure Honourable Cuthbert would be happy that at least there's something where the two of us agree. Secondly, Chair, I think the issue around the relations between South Africa and China and the extent to which they would impact into the trade relations with Taiwan. I think Honourable Tring covered that because it was also an area where I would be interested to know how the department would navigate those kind of muddy waters. Chair, South Africa is part of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. Whatever we do, first and foremost, it must make business sense and trade opportunities to the people of the continent, inter and intra-trade. And in that regard, I would be interested to know in concrete terms as to the opportunities that have been created by the African Continental Free Trade Agreement to South Africans, the footprint of South Africans in the region and the broader continent, and how do we quantify that in terms of the quantum? What investment have we injected, especially supporting Black industrialists in areas of manufacturing and any other trade area that is an opportunity for South Africans to have a footprint. And also, Chair, in the report, there are issues around export. And within export, we have the minerals. Now, I would be interested at
is it just me or have we lost Honourable Burns Mwamashe?
It's not just you, Chair.
Okay, I think Honourable Burns Mwamashe, if you can hear us, you must switch off your video. We've seen your face. I think you can switch off to proceed. But he might be logged out soon. He's fully. Honourable Burns Mwamashe. Okay, there is gone. Okay.
Chair, we'll make contact with him, Chair, and then we will maybe proceed with other members, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Let's do that. I think the next member is Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. And also, let me first welcome the presentation. It's very much succinct and straightforward, more informative.
Apologies, Chair. I think it was network.
Okay, we have Honorable Mbuyani on the floor at the moment. We'll come back to you. But can I propose that you switch off your video when you come back after Honorable Mbuyani?
Okay.
Proceed, Honorable Mbuyani.
No, thanks, Chair. No, I was just having some clarity-seeking question under Program 3 and 6. The target on the one designated product was not achieved because the designation were withdrawn. I just wanted to check because they wanted to broaden their public participation and public consultation before the publication. What caused the DTIC to broaden the public consultation in the middle of the project? That's interested to know what was the cause of. Then on Program 6, Chairperson, there's a projected localization in which resources have been allocated. I'm just interested in checking what are the spin-offs in terms of structural transformation, also decentralization of the economy in dealing with the triple challenge that we have in poverty, unemployment, and inequality. What was the intention of the department in terms of the spin-offs, the agreement? Does that talk to our unemployment rate and how are they assisting the government in dealing with the poverty alleviation program? I think that was our clarity question. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbuyani. Honorable Burns Namashi.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. You see, these are challenges of being in a rural province. Network sometimes it creates difficulties. I was just on that point of the export, which is a grave concern, Chair, because if we export raw material, it means we are equally exporting jobs. Why is that happening? I would be very much interested. And what is the plan to actually circumvent this kind of exploitation? Because I consider it to be economic exploitation. On Program 3, Honorable Chair, it is reported that 385 construction jobs have been created on the construction of a 1.1 billion edible oil plant. Now, in concrete terms, my question would be, how much of this investment is private? And how is it funded by the department? What's the contribution? And secondly, Honorable Chair, how much does it cost the department to create one job? Because if you are just to use a simple arithmetic analysis on the figures presented, one job seems to cost at least 2.8 million. Can the department expand on this? so that we can know exactly what is it that has happened. Was there any value for money? And we kind of come up with a very clear and accountable, prudent system in terms of which we use the public funds. Thank you very much, Chair.
Sorry, Honourable Moatse. Honourable Fring, do you have a follow-up question? Okay, Honourable Moatse, you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the funding approved of 12.5 million for the re-employment of 329 people for Jelvon Africa. Chairperson, we want to know or to get clarity on the status of these jobs. Are they permanent or temporary jobs? And what was the reason for the loss of jobs in the first place? Second question, Chairperson, what is the extent of investment support was provided to local production of films and documentaries telling South African stories? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Srim, are you there? Okay, we take it, it's a legacy, and I just have one question myself on the review of the governance framework that was not completed in the last financial year, and to just hear what is the resources that are required and by when will it be completed. Over to you, Acting DG, and your team, of course.
Thank you, Chairperson, for and to the honourable members for those questions. Chair, there were a number of questions, so I'm going to try to maybe go through them in the order that they were asked, so that I don't miss any. The question from Honourable Cuthbert with regard to the lotteries legislation. I do know we have quite an extensive program of around our regulations. And I would request Dr. Evelyn Masocha to come in to then respond to that. With regard to the employees who were suspended, we have, as Honourable Cuthbert had indicated, there was a formal response to the PQ from the minister. But just to indicate that with regard to disciplinary matters, we do have our human resources or corporate services unit that manages this. Just very quickly, just with regard to some of the detail, the deputy director who did not disclose financial interest. So this is a DPSA requirement where annually our all senior management, as well as those who work in the finance area, have to actually disclose their financial interests. So this is purely a compliance matter which an official failed to do timelessly within the legislative timeline. And this is despite numerous reminders being sent across the department. So this is an isolated matter which the corporate services unit would be dealing with. On the chief director, one, that suspension, that matter is still undergoing. Currently, it's very difficult to provide any extensive details at this stage, as the department is still gathering information from witnesses, and one of the witnesses is in the is from another department, so that the matter can still move forward in that regard. With regards to the acting director general, I'm sure if the minister was here, he would have provided a much more extensive overview. But this was also a PQ which the minister responded to. And following the retirement of the former director general, put together a transitional team comprising of the deputy directors general to really provide some stability in leadership. This was a transitional arrangement, and I've been advised that the recruitment process is now recommencing following the completion of the department's annual performance plans, and I think that would be completed within the next few months. There was a question from Honourable. Yes.
They are 32 questions, and I think some of them are interlinked. So if we can then just see if we can group some of the responses instead of going through 32 questions.
Sure.
I'm afraid we'll run out of time. But it's up to you, DG, to manage that. Thank you.
We'll do. Thanks, Chair. There was a question of around trade relations with Taiwan. This is a matter that's being largely led by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. I think the members are familiar with the matter on hand. I think South Africa's position has always been that of a one China policy, and currently the bilaterals are currently purely on an official level, and this is done under the leadership of DERCO to ensure that whatever we do from a trade perspective is managed quite closely, considering that, that this is a very sensitive matter as well. There was a question of around industrialists and how many have survived. Similarly, there was a number of questions of around companies that were funded together with the beneficiaries, as well as some of the numbers. Chuck raised quite an important question. Currently, the department on an annual basis goes through quite a rigorous audit process, and the numbers which we provide in these presentations, as well as our annual report, goes through an annual audit. So those numbers, from an audit perspective, those numbers are verifiable. In addition to that, we do provide an annual report on incentives, and this provides quite a detailed list of beneficiaries who have been supported from the DTIC programs. Similarly, IDC would do something very similar in the sense that they would also disclose or provide a list of all companies that were supported through the IDC programs as well. So this is something that we can provide, and maybe through Sulu and Suroj, we will provide a copy of that report for Honorable Shwaku. And I think that would also provide good insight. I think if there is a need for a possible workshop, just to go through the different programs, we could then quite quickly provide that as well. There was a question around small business. Honorable thing, from my side, I think it's above my pay grade, but currently within the cluster work, the Department of Small Business works quite closely with the DTIC, and a very good example would be the very recent floods in KZN a month ago and now over the weekend, and we've already seen the coordination of work between DTIC, small business, and other cluster departments in how the department and then respond to that. There was a question of jobs and there were a few questions around how some of the work we do support jobs in this area. I will maybe ask our chief economist. I think he would be able to articulate this a lot better than I can, and maybe he can just sketch out exactly how our different programs and implement supports job creation. Honorable thing, the trade surplus and your point around beneficiation, I think we're in full agreement with that. you would see that there's been a number of projects that have been supported over the last few years to ensure that our primary minerals are beneficiated. And I know that in the recent mining in Durba as well, there was a number of projects which the minister has also provided. But if there is any further details, if I can ask my colleague from InvestSA, Mr. Yunus Hussain, maybe to provide some details of some of the very specific projects. But I think the whole idea of beneficiation is to ensure that there is value add on what we do. And anything that we do export is value-added manufactured product. The skills question is a very important one. There's a number of programs directly within the department that deals with skills. A very good one would be the Insimbi program, in which young graduates are taken into a program in which they are trained in with regards to tool making. Similarly, we work with the National Skills Fund on tools programs called the Itukise program, as well as another program in which young graduates are trained, provided work experience, and they are taken to a very rigorous program so that it provides them with adequate experience going into the job market. The 7 billion rand target that was not met, around the incentive program, this is it's one which we try to manage quite closely, but to indicate the honorable thing, it's not an unrealistic target. We do have a pipeline of investments at any given in time to the value of 10 billion rand. From a cash flow perspective, any disbursements or cash that leaves the department is upon an investment or investor realizing its investment. So we work quite closely with investors once a project is approved to ensure that they work within the timeline, because from our side, it's a very difficult one to manage from a cash flow perspective. But in terms of the target, it is a realistic target. And we currently have an investment book of around plus minus 10 billion rand. The question of around interns, it's quite an important question. And this is something that we work, in fact, it's a directive from the DPSA in terms of a certain percentage of our budget must go towards employing incentives. DPSA also encourages departments to dedicate 10% of the department's vacant posts to recruit and retain graduates with potential beyond the graduate development phase into entry-level positions. And this is something which we have seen that graduates that come through this program, some of them get absorbed within the department, but a large portion of them get absorbed within the broader public service. The question around the Sana Fund is quite an important one, but also a very complex one, in the sense that the Sana Fund arrangement came about a number of years ago with regard to a competition matter into the construction industry. And out of that investigation, there was a settlement agreement between the Competition Commission and a number of construction companies. And the settlement was that there was going to be an annual payment into the Tirisano Trust Fund. Some of these construction companies are under financial distress. Some of them are under business rescue. Hence, the flow of funds into the Tirisano Trust Fund has been delayed. And the department is working quite closely with its legal team, as well as the construction company, to see how we can then revive this. So the understanding in the Tirisano Trust Fund is predominantly as a result of those payments, or the delayed payments from the construction companies as a result of that settlement. The underspending questions, I will hand over to the CFO. They would be able to respond to that. And similarly with the 40% of the budget on incentives, the CFO would be able to articulate that quite well. The question around master plans, the chief economist will definitely be able to provide that, and I'll hand over to him shortly. And then the question of around the trade bilaterals and how this has a direct benefit with regard to job creation and reduction in poverty, that's quite an important one. What we do with all our trade engagement is to broaden markets for South African producers beyond South Africa. And what this does is that it then allows companies in South Africa to broaden and to increase their local production. And through this increase in local production, it has a direct effect on job creation. And this indirectly will also address some of the poverty questions. But this is what we attempt to do with all our trade engagement. And a good example would be the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, in which we will open up this market of over a billion people. And what this does for South Africa is it provides enormous potential to advance South Africa's position in terms of exports and creating local jobs in the South African economy. The question of salaries on underspending, I'll also have that question over to the CFO quite quickly. Trade relations, we've done that one. The question by Honourable Burns and Namashe around the Africa Continental Free Trade Area and what is our sort of a broad vision in terms of how we will then ensure that there is investment in the continent, as well as how do we ensure that there's value added exports in this. We do have a work program under DDG Lerato Matabokwe, Trade Invest Africa. And I would just ask maybe Ms. Lerato Matabokwe just to come in very quickly to outline how we do that. The question of around construction jobs for the Wilmar plant, and what I can confirm is that is it's a 1.1 billion rand investment. It is a private investment from the company. Where the department gets involved is through the SEZ fund, where we provide funding for top infrastructure, and that would then provide the construction jobs. So those two are very different numbers in terms of what we're trying to measure. But our measurement would be the funding that's provided to Wilma in terms of, or to the SEZ, for the construction of a top structure for this investment. And we would be able to provide exactly what the what it costs per job for this particular investment. The question from Honorable Mbuyani, Chair, as I conclude shortly, the designation one, here what we want to do is through the designation, we actually intervene in those two projects to ensure that local content is considered. And what we did in these two instances is to ensure that there is local content is being considered. So these tenders would have to be re-advertised, or the terminal of reference would have to be re-amended. But flowing out of the Concord judgment, the department has been engaging a number of state departments, entities, to ensure that local content and local procurement becomes part of their supply chain policies. This is a very important instrument for South Africa, and we want to ensure that this is not fallen off. And we're also engaging Treasury where the new public procurement bill is addressed. Yeah, I would maybe very quickly come to the last question from my side, maybe the governance framework. Chair, the governance framework is something that we will deal with quite decisively in this financial year. We have also engaged the chief economist and some of the capacity within his unit to assist in ensuring that this review is completed, as it's quite an important review considering that we have quite a large number of entities within the DTIC's family, and we want to ensure that this governance framework is dealt with quite timely. And this is the work that will be led by the acting CEO. Chair, if I can then hand over very quickly to Dr. Evelyn Masocha, followed by Mr. Stephen Hannibal, Eunice Hussein, CFO, and then lastly to Lerato Matabohe, in that order. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Dr. Masocha.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. Morning, acting DG and colleagues. In terms of the question that Honorable Casper has asked on the regulatory impact assessment of the Lotteries Act, we have finalized that regulatory impact of assessment review. We do these reviews on an ongoing basis for different legislation that we administer. So the plan is to then undergo the legislative development process, which includes the development of a policy around the issues that we identified and policy concerns that were raised in the regulatory review. So it's a bit of a lengthy process, and currently we just have a report and a study around this, and we will then be looking at the policy recommendations that will then inform the legislation. Some of the issues that were looked at were the model of the distributing agencies, the operating structure of the operator, some of the definitional constraints that we have been identified, and the issues of illegal or unlawful lotteries that are taking place in the country that also compete with the lottery. And Honorable Kapbev, in terms of sharing of the report, how we can share it with Parliament. However, we try to keep them internal before the legislative processes are finalized. But we will look into sharing that report with the committee. So this is an ongoing process. So once it's been finalized, then there will be those recommendations that inform the policy and then the legislative development process. With the actual amendment that could come from that process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Masocha. Who's the next in your list? Mr. Hannibal. Over to you,
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to you and the Honorable Members, the DG and other colleagues on the platform. Chair, if you'll allow me, I'll talk to the issues of the master plans and the employment strategy, if that's okay. Firstly, I think it was Honorable Tswaku who raised the question of the master plans. And just to mention, Honorable Members, that the master plans came in when President Ramaphosa put together his new administration in 2019, and we have around about 20 master plans within government as a whole. So within the DTIC, there are master plans in sugar, poultry, autos, the clothing, textile, footwear and leather value chain, as well as furniture, and most recently in global business services. And really the way the master plans work is that we get all of the social partners in a particular sector around the table to really talk about what it will take to grow a particular sector. So in the autos case, it was clear that there were significant investments in the pipeline, but there were a couple of issues a few years back around labor market stability. There were issues arising around the transition to electric vehicles. There were issues around how do we support manufacturers to get product to the ports, and perhaps most importantly of all, there were issues around transformation in the sector. And so the Autos Master Plan brought
organized labor, business, and various parts of government together under the leadership of Minister Patel to try and really thrash out some agreements on some of these issues, which would result in much higher levels of investment in the sector, would lead to stability in employment, would in some cases grow jobs, and very critically would eventually lead to the putting together of a very substantial transformation fund of about 6 billion rand. And so those master plans are really a means for government working with the key role players in the economy, being organized labor and business, to unlock investments, to increase exports and to transform the sectors of our economy. Outside of the DTIC, there are some in the order of about 10 master plans being developed in other departments. These include the forestry master plan, which has been approved by cabinet last year. There's a digital economy master plan. There's the agriculture and agro-processing master plan, which was launched by the Minister of Dalrad last week, and a number of other master plans. And they all have a similar methodology to it, which is to say, what is it that government can bring to the party, but what is it that organized business and labor can bring as well? And I think our view, honorable members, is that the success certainly of the master plans that have been approved so far is I think quite visible in terms of retention of jobs, new investment in the sector. For those sectors like sugar and poultry, which were under threat from import and from a lack of competitiveness in certain aspects, we've seen what we believe to be really positive developments where there's new investment coming through, jobs are being retained, there are new entrants in the sectors, for example in poultry. As Minister Patel mentioned in his budget vote, there are a number of black contract farmers that are now supplying the big abattoirs. So that's overall the approach on master plans. The master plans that sit outside of the DTIC are also progressing at pace, and as I mentioned, they follow a similar methodology to retain jobs and increase investment and exports. With regard to the question from the Honourable Member on employment, I think it would be important, Honourable Chair, just to make the point that there's no one department in South Africa that is responsible for employment alone. All of the economic ministries, as well as the ministries in the social cluster, are effectively responsible for employment. And so if you look at what government as a whole has been trying to do over the last 2 to 3 years, you'll see that the presidential employment stimulus is a quite significant intervention to support job creation. It has a budget of about 24 billion. In the last financial year, it supported job opportunities of over 560,000. So that's one part of a really big intervention. Then there are a range of other parts that fit within the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. For example, as honourable members will know, the ERRP includes infrastructure investment, includes rejuvenation of the tourism sector. It includes quite significant commitments by business on local procurement. And it's the combination of all of those factors and all of those interventions that will have an impact on employment and help us to lower unemployment. The DTIC's role, of course, is on the industrial side. And although it's an important role, it's a relatively modest role in comparison to all of the other players in the economic ministries who have important functions, such as, for example, the employment tax incentive, which is implemented by National Treasury, the Youth Employment Service, which is a part DTIC intervention along with business to get young people into jobs from which they can develop. And as the Honourable Member said, I think it was Honourable Singh, in some cases we have found that our people are not adequately skilled to start work once they leave school or you leave university or Technikon. And so our programs like the Youth Employment Service are really around giving those young people the opportunity to get into the work work environment and to build their skills. Just a last point on my side, perhaps, Honourable Chair, is Honourable Twako also raised the issue of the aspen plant in Mbeha. Just to say, Honourable Chair, the plant has not closed. What the aspen company was highlighting to all actors in the economic space was the lack of support and the lack of orders for its vaccines. And we agree that it's a significant challenge. We are also sympathetic because we know that Africa as a continent has not had the same level of vaccination that other parts of the world have. And that's why our president and our minister have been arguing so strongly that we need vaccine facilities in Africa supplying vaccines to African countries and to African governments. But the plant is not closed down. It's merely signaling that we need to support the vaccination drive so that we can, in a sense, localize vaccine production in South Africa. Honourable Chair, I hope those were the key areas that the questions were raised on. Let me thank you for the opportunity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Next official. Who was the next one?
Mr. Yunus Hussain.
Oh, Mr. Hussain, over to you.
Good afternoon, Chair, and honorable members. I'll just touch upon...
Hussain.
I'll just touch upon the beneficiation question that Honourable Tring has asked and highlight some of the projects that we introduced at the mining in Durban. There's quite a few traditional beneficiation projects, but I just want to highlight some of them that were in the minerals of the future, particularly in our EV and EV storage and battery market. In the case of the IDC is both the funder as well as strategic partner in these projects, and some of them will be coming online early next year. For example, the support that IDC is giving to Bushveld Minerals for the downstream vanadium value chain, which is essential for the deployment of grid-scale renewable energy storage technologies. Second one is on EV materials, Ionic Staccato battery. It's the processing of battery materials for EV storage, and then a big one for the Gilgamesh projects, which is the processing of cobalt, nickel, and copper for EV and EV storage markets. And then we will see South Africa's first vanadium redox flow battery manufacturing plant implementation, which will come online by March 2023. And then there's another project, which we call NMC, the nickel manganese cobalt, for developing, for processing and developing lithium ion battery technologies. So just to give you a flavor, some of the beneficiation, new beneficiation projects that are online and currently scheduled between the next 12 to 24 months to come online in this space. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hussain.
Then we can next call on Ms. Irene Ramaphosa, the Acting CFO.
Okay, thank you. Over to you, Ms. Ramaphosa.
Thank you, Chair. I will be covering the questions on the financial information. Chair, the first part was on the they wanted elaboration on the understanding on Program 3 and Program 4 to understand what the issues were exactly. Program 3, Chairperson, this is the program where we house the BEE Commission, and there is a process that has been underway to try and basically list the BEE Commission to so that they can have their independence. That process did not come to fruition by the end of the financial year, but we had budgeted for that. That also resulted in the contributed to the underspending. And also, as part of that, they had planned to basically also move out of the campus and go rent some space somewhere else, but looking at where we are financially as government, the DTIC then decided, you know, it's best that we house them within the department. However, we had initially budgeted for them to move as part of them listing, which is a process that did not unfold, Chairperson. So that contributed quite a bit towards the understanding. The other part under Program 3, Chairperson, it's the issue of SEZ Advisory Board. There is a process that is currently underway to appoint the board. So the board is not yet in place. So the work that needs to be done by that board, which was budgeted for as well, has not yet it's not yet taking place, Chairperson, which contributed to the understanding. Under Program 10, Chair, they wanted to know what was this research that they were referring to. There was a particular research which is called the API, which is the active pharmaceutical ingredients. So what basically this does is it's chemicals that eventually go into the making pharmaceuticals. And that project it also was not finalized at the end of the financial year, Chairperson, which also resulted in the huge underspending within Program 10. Chair, if I can then move to the next question on the COE. There was a question about why did we underspend so much under our COE? Chair, I think on this particular one, you would have noted, and you know that within the department we do have a few positions where people are acting. We have a few vacancies as well, which we are in the process of filling. But we are busy with the process of filling the critical positions right now. We have those positions being the acting DG, being the some of the DDGs which are currently acting. So that process is unfolding as we speak, Chairperson. So I take it as soon as these positions, critical positions, are filled, then we'll be able to see what's basically left of our budget, and for us to be able to then budget for other positions that we possibly need within the departments once we make sure that the entire structure is fit for the purpose of the mandate of the department, Chair. So the issues of people acting and so forth has really contributed to the underspending. And then, Chair, on the last one which I have was our biggest spending line item, which is Program 6, to say what exactly is that. Chairperson, it's incentives. And then within the department, we have different incentives. The first one is export market and investment assistance. We support industrial innovation. We also support the services sectors. We have that, and that deals with the film and television production incentives, the global business services, Chair, and then we also have manufacturing development incentives, which would include the likes of your auto sector, Chair, and also would include technology, basically the partnerships that we have in doing research in terms of technology technology and so forth, doing research with institutions for technology in the space of science, engineering, and with some of the universities that we have in the department. Chairperson, another incentive that we have is industrial financing. There's a loan that we give to the IDC as well, which they then further distribute as part of their processes again to expand within the various sectors that they look into as and when people apply. Chair, in Program 6, again, the issue of why did we underspend really. I had given a reason earlier on, but also we did have a few applications due to the economic downturn, which the DG had alluded to. But how the incentives also work is when you give out an incentive, they work in a reimbursive manner. So there are certain conditions that we put in place that people need to meet. So there'll be key performance requirements that they need to meet. So there are certain guidelines that are set out for the various incentives. And if the applicants have not complied with those guidelines, we are not able to disburse funds to them. So if those requirements are not adhered to, we won't disperse, and therefore that will definitely result to underspending. But Chair, I'm happy through the DG, given that this is our biggest spending line item, I'm happy that as a department through the DG, Chair, we could come and actually unpack all the different and various incentive programs that we have within the department. But basically, yes, that's what we do. We assist the various sectors that I've mentioned that I've mentioned earlier on. Yes. I think I've answered all the questions that had to do with finance. I'm not sure if I left anything else, DG. I'll hand over back to the DG. Thanks.
Thanks, Irene. If we can then call upon Ms. Lerato Matabohe to then respond to the question from Honourable Burns and Namashi. Lerato?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honourable Members and colleagues. I think the DG has started to outline some of the elements in answering the question, so I'll just add onto what I was already said. So fundamentally, as a department, how we support businesses abroad and how we contribute to them being competitive is really to help them access new markets. We do it, and I would summarize and say in five ways as a department. The first one, of course, is in the realm of trade negotiations. And here, this is where we are establishing a predictable environment for our businesses, whether we are negotiating on the African continent, or we are negotiating an economic partnership agreement with the EU, or whichever trading partner we're negotiating with. At the heart of it is that we want to have predictable rules for our companies, and of course, as far as possible, carve out special concessions, as it were, for our businesses. So our trade negotiations as an instrument for sustaining our businesses is quite important. Secondly, is our intervention in the realm of exporter development. We are cognizant that as an economy, you know, we don't have enough enterprises that are able to export, that are able to operate in global markets. So we have a dedicated program where we capacitate, we train, we provide the tools, as it were, to new enterprises, as well as large enterprises even, that have not yet accessed the export market. So this is where our Global Exporter Passport Program comes in, and other exporter training interventions come in. The third intervention is in the export promotion realm. So here we are saying, you know, once we've negotiated these rules for our businesses, we need to be able to assist them to access markets, access new markets, as well as optimize current markets that they're in. So in the market access space, we then use particularly the Export Marketing Investment Assistance Scheme, MEIA scheme, to support businesses to go abroad in different ways. Some it could be to a trade exhibition, some it could be to, you know, on a trade mission, as the acting CFO mentioned, there's particular guidelines for support. For some, we reimburse the company, for some we pay in total, so it will depend on, one, the size of the company, et cetera. So we make sure then that we support South African businesses to access markets abroad and provide financial assistance to do that. The fourth way in which we support as well is with our Export Credit Insurance Corporation, which is one of the DTIC agencies. Here, the agency provides insurance cover, risk guarantees, insurance cover, as it were, for our companies that want to export as well as that want to invest abroad. The last mode of intervention is with respect to, I would call it our diplomatic capital, as it were, our government-to-government interactions. Now, this is where we optimize the environment for our businesses abroad. this is where we utilize the government muscle, you know, the ministerial office, the presidential office, to raise particular issues and bottlenecks that our companies are facing abroad, or to highlight opportunities that our companies want to pursue abroad through BNCs. I think that members may have seen in the report that we hosted BNCs. It's not just for its own sake. Those are very strategic platforms where we raise and carve out opportunities for our companies abroad and use government-to-government interactions to facilitate those. So those are the key five interventions, honorable members. But all the overarching support that underpins all five of them is really our economic research and analysis capability. You know, we offer research to companies. Some may want to know, you know, what is the risk profile of Angola, for example. So we would be offering that sort of support to our businesses, and also on the ground market intelligence through our foreign economic representatives abroad, where the DTIC is represented by FER. We also get on the ground market intel that we share with our companies abroad. So we are very deliberate and quite committed to making sure that we enable South African companies to be competitive in the global market space, because scale is important. South African economy is too small to sustain the kind of growth that we want. So we're very clear that our growth also lies abroad. So DG, I hope I've covered what is required, and I'll hand back over to you.
Thank you, Lerato. Chair, just in closing, there was a question from Honorable Moache around the support for the film industry. And then there was a question of around the jobs on a particular project. I'm going to ask Ms. Reka Jiwan, the acting DGG for Industrial Finance, to respond very quickly to that, and Chair, then we can then close at that point and hand over back to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, members and colleagues. Just with regard to the breakdown around the film and TV production incentives, as we are aware that South Africa has been, you know, a very favored destination for foreign and local filmmakers. What we have had is very competent local technicians and local companies that are able to supply technical requirements of filmmakers, and that is in the areas of cameras, tracking equipment, light, sound, and post-production facilities. We also have a wide range of actors and extras for, you know, lead and smaller roles. And this is the basis on, you know, which the film and TV production incentive has attracted both, you know, international and local filmmakers, and to promote a development of local industry as well. So they're broken down into three areas, which is the film and foreign film, TV, television production, and post-production, the South African film and television production and co-production, as well as the South African emerging black filmmakers. Through the question around, you know, the breakdown, the percentage of South African and local movies and the emerging black filmmakers that have been supported, we have supported seven projects, and that is amounting to 44 million rands of approvals. With regard to the breakdown of the 329 jobs, 179 of those jobs are through the local, you know, film industry, which is the emerging black filmmakers and the South African film and TV production and co-productions. The balance would be to the foreign movies, and that is largely because the foreign movies have, you know, larger budgets to spend, and they employ more people. I just also thought, DG, I'll take the opportunity also to respond to the question around the structural, localization and the structural spin-offs and transformation. With regard to that, so we have different, you know, various incentive programs that have specified objectives and targets, and this is where the DGIC
partners and cost shares with business to achieve, you know, objectives of job creation, transformation, localization, and inclusive growth. So we have SPY and the TRIP programs, and these are programs that essentially enhance skills development and innovative capacity of the manufacturing sector, as well as other incentive programs like the automotive support, investment support program, which supports productive assets in order to improve productivity, create jobs, and also attempts to balance, you know, the automation of production processes and job creation. So all incentive programs also target, and we have implemented BBB compliance level as a mandatory condition, and this contributes to transforming the economy. What I would like to also emphasize on is that from the projects that Program 6 has supported, we also require companies to retain jobs for the incentive period. So it is essential that for us to disburse any payments, the jobs should be there and intact. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to also touch on, you know, the whether companies have survived the lockdown and whether companies have closed down during lockdown. So companies have survived lockdown, and we generally have an approximate 20% fallout rate. It's a general fallout rate, which is a cancellation rate, where companies may not reach the point of disbursement. So they get an approval, but they may not reach a point where the project will actually be established, and they basically fall off the incentive board. So, or you would find that there are companies that would actually establish, but later on may not continue their operations. So that is ranging between a 20%. So companies during the lockdown have survived, but there are various reasons why companies would actually not remain on our books. And that could be, you know, they request, they delay the start of production dates, because of, you know, they're not in a position to reach financial closure. Some may not comply to the incentive guideline rules, such as BBB compliance, the job creation requirements, the job retention requirements, and in some instances, some do not have the information that we require in order to process their claims. So it becomes extremely difficult on the part of the DTIC, particularly when we're extending public funds, to then verify certain key criteria in order to disperse. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG.
Thank you, DG. Is there any other person who must respond? I'm just very aware of time. We're running slightly over time.
We can conclude at this point. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, you're not going to make concluding remarks. You've concluded, DG.
Okay. From the department side, I think the questions that were raised always assist in how we would then craft our new plans. We have presented our new annual performance plan, and Chair, we're looking forward to also present our annual report once that has been completed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, and the team who has been with us this morning. And thank you for taking time to answer all the questions that have been posed by members. But I'm sure if there is anything that has not been answered, members will receive a response via in writing, but as far as I can see, you have covered most of the comments that and questions that the members had. So members, in concluding with that agenda item, it's now 13 minutes past 11. We were supposed to break at 11 for 15 minutes, but I want to ask that we just break from now until 20 past 11, and then proceed with our next agenda item. So thank you to the department for attending this meeting. Thank you. Committee secretary, is that in order?
Yeah, that's in all the chair, because we convene at 20. You did.